This is Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk. And there's more at the website, allbook-books.com. And a little bit over a year posting at Substack, Musings from Between the Lines is the name on my page there, to keep up with the most current essays and poems. So this week I couldn't decide whether to continue with part two of the Scorched Earth book by Jonathan Crary. One friend was eager to hear more. Or to talk about the Christmas holiday. And then it dawned on me to do both because they are interconnected. First off, let's look at the holiday. I have mixed feelings, you know, the childhood, pleasant memories, and I get into the good vibes, and it's pretty at night, like a neighbor has a beautiful tree with lights on it and a star, big tree, I think a blue spruce, and the other night it just looked so beautiful. And then I also thought, with a star on top, and it looked so beautiful, and then I also thought, wow, nobody like protests all the fossil fuels for the electricity to light all these lights that are also probably made in China. But hey, it's the big celebration for 2.6 maybe billion people on the planet, a huge amount of people on the planet, Christian. It is like focus on the biggest holy, so-called holy day of the year. So that's understandable. But then again, why does those environmental concerns go out the window? And what about the solstice, the winter solstice? These are the darkest days of the year. So, yeah, one way is to light things up, but another way is to go into the darkness and find one's inner light. So I'm not saying, you know, negative is bad to put up Christmas lights. I'm just saying the discussion gets one-sided. It's just not even questioned whether what to do anything about otherwise, which is something Jonathan Crary mentions in Scorched Earth, Beyond the Digital Age to a Post-Capitalist World. How we're reaching a point of the technology is, it's like not even being questioned that there could be an alternative, but he gives a lot of reasons why there needs to be. So back to the Christmas topic, though. This year I noticed at the stores with the music, the repeating holiday songs, it's like a show. It's like a pre-written theatrical show with the music. And people dress up, the costumes, the decorations at the stores is like the set design. And it's all this kind of enforced, pumped in, aren't you ecstatic about shopping for the Savior kind of thing. And then I remembered in my book, Moving Through the Empty Gate Forest, Inside Looking Out, which I had talked about at Thanksgiving, how that was fabricated holiday. In a similar but different way, so is Christmas. So I'll read that little section. In the 16th century, the Christmas tree got moved indoors, so outdoors became foreign, which is what the word root of foreign is, outdoors. Freiburg, Germany is cited as the birthplace of Christmas trees. The tree was part of Paradise Plays. And quote, the Paradise Play depicted the story of the creation of Adam and Eve, their sin, and their banishment from paradise. The play ended with the promise of the coming Savior and his incarnation. So that to me is connecting the dots, is this whole, the shopping fervor and the theatrics that go with it is the modern Paradise Play. Because it is, you know, the Christmas cards with the snow and the cozy house and the fireplace. It's like here's your moment of paradise or your week of paradise. And so it's you know, again, it's for the coming, the promise of the coming Savior. So at some level, it has this sense of this theatrics that it's a rerun for the umpteenth time of the Passion Play. And the passion, I notice how many people give gifts. I give gifts. It's nice. I think of them as here's something to help you get through winter, because, you know, a lot of times we don't see people as much because we're indoors in the winter and staying warm. So, hey, here's something to help you get through the winter, some food, a sweater, whatever. So there's that nice side to it, but then there's this whole commodification thing going on, and this paradise of this passion, the passion play of the passion and the paradise of giving gifts, which is sometimes people communicate more through the gifts than they do the rest of the year with just genuine direct emotion. Show some emotion and some paradise with people all year. It doesn't have to be insulated into the little Christmas season. But anyway, I wish you Merry Christmas. And this year, amazingly, Happy Hanukkah. It starts on Christmas. So if those are your systems or traditions, then I wish you well with those. So to the Kareri book, because this is the side, as he shows with the internet and the technology, the Christmas side we don't see is the destruction of the earth that goes into many of the products and all the wrapping paper and all the accoutrements and all the 60-foot plastic Santas and all the kitschy stuff that people buy and they put on their lawns and this and that, which again, I try to see both sides of things. It's cute, it's for the kids, yada yada, but in looking at this big picture of what is the repercussions with the environment and the earth, and that's the side that we don't look at enough. So scorched earth, I'm just going to follow up with about 12 pages of the section one, which gets up to 48. It is so jam-packed, I'm like underlining sections and pages. It's just the way this guy writes really resonates with me. Now here's an interesting bit about the rigged system. The displaced and dispossessed faced extermination, slavery, or the basest forms of wage labor. Rosa Luxemburg astutely notes how capitalist Europe is the first place where, quote, the uncertainty of social existence, end quote, and the precariousness of life and work is a fundamental systemic goal, not a secondary byproduct. Well, this is what he talks about in these pages here, how this whole systemic goal that is going on, it's not just a side effect of capitalism. It is literally in the programming. Well, things like the destruction of family life, the devastation of neighborhoods, the denudation of forests, the pollution of rivers, the deterioration of craft standards, and the general degradation of existence, including housing and arts, as well as the innumerable forms of public and private life that do not affect profits. That was a quote from somewhere. The assault on the young, which begins earlier and earlier in childhood, is a continuation of the neoconservative backlash to the rebellions of the 1960s and the whole political counterculture of those years. Since the mid-1990s, the internet complex has been the overarching means for not just neutralizing the insurgent energies of youth, but for preventing youth from experiencing and knowing itself. To ward off any developments resembling the youth movement of the 60s, it became essential to deny youth the spaces and times for even limited autonomy and collective self-recognition. Over the past two decades, young people have been deflected from political agency and have become the sector into which demands for technological conformity and consumption have been most unsparing. Notable are the ceaseless efforts to cultivate habits and predictable behaviors to last a lifetime. Untold millions are spent researching the neural foundations of preparation formation. Generational segments, Gen Xers, Gen Zs, etc., are invented by a pseudo-sociology to define the homogeneous consumerist tasks that are intended as an inescapable mass destiny. However, in broad terms of impoverishment in the global south and elsewhere, the young are subjected to different and more ruthless forms of deprivation brought on by austerity, indebtedness, famine, and state terror. So while the global south and people outside this internet, northern western bubble, so for those outside the western bubble of how many likes did you get and did you get a better deal on your purchase, there are people literally trying to survive. And that's part of this two-tiered system that the Todd Miller's Empire of Borders, which I interviewed him recently, that was one of the highlights of the book for me, was showing this two-tiered system that has developed already in the world. It's a global thing, hence the phrase global corporate empire. Some of the phrases, whether it's a whole page or just a line or two, Crary, I just really like the way he describes stuff. It makes me think about it and see it in a different way. Addictive stimulation and electroluminescent homogeneity. Addictive stimulation and electroluminescent homogeneity. Because I experience that sometimes. You know, I'm reading articles, I'm emailing, and blah blah blah, and it's almost like after 15 minutes of that, I start looking for something else. It's like this addictive stimulation that I have to monitor, and I think a lot of people are beyond the point. They don't even realize they're addicted. And this is where this is like no holds barred with Crary. Spontaneity vanishes amid incessant images of violence, joyless pornography, cruelty, and mockery. The continual adjusting to the shifting fashions and signifiers of social media recalls Hannah Arendt's warning that cliches, stock phrases, standardized codes of expression and conduct have the socially recognized function of protecting us against reality, that is, against a claim on our thinking. Wonderment now is numbed or displaced by whatever is promoted as technologically, quote, awesome. I particularly like that one. Wonderment now is numbed or displaced by whatever is promoted as technologically awesome. So wonderment, I mean, that to me is looking out, seeing a bug crawling on a flower, or the watching a sunset or a sunrise or whatever. There's a wonder about stuff which takes a little time to look at, but you know, you don't hear as much people saying, wow, I saw that. It's like, wow, look at this technology thing. And again, he mentions the 60s, and there's this current squelching of different pathways and rebellions. The goal now is to disallow youth from ever having the circumstances in which to imagine and build a future that belongs to them. Instead, there is an endless news about young people creatively and disruptively making use of their digital tools and platforms. The priority is to derail the possibility of a potentially rebellious youth, and in order to conceal their jobless, wordless future, there is the dismal fiction of a generation aspiring to become influencers, founders of startups, or otherwise aligned with spiritless entrepreneurial values. Another phrase there I quote like a lot, spiritless entrepreneurial values. But the young are not the only ones dispossessed of times and spaces for interhuman connection. The neutralizing and non-financializable forms of social interaction injures the communicative capacities of all human beings. This is accomplished not only through the relentless lying and disinformation which have long been part of the conduct of states and powerful institutions. More important now are the deranging effects of the maelstrom of debilitating incoherence in which we are now permanently submerged. Well, I don't know about permanently, but... And Crary continues, the internet is the digital counterpart of the vast, rapidly expanding garbage patch in the Pacific Ocean. Within it, the accumulating detritus of global networks choke off any clearing into which living exchanges between individuals or communities can occur. Again, I would beg to differ as far as, you know, certain people that I communicate with, and, you know, I watched them, Navajo Diné, man, being interviewed in his truck, and that's online, so that's a treasure, so I would argue that, but I get, again, this is Crary unapologetically is approaching his approach from the big picture. The immense and unending agglomeration of data, whether as images or language, produces a numbing cacophony and disorientation in which thinking is constricted and the possibility of dialogue crowded out. For millions of people every day, the primary interaction with others is the soon-to-be-forgotten mention of some floating particles of this online morass. One of the foremost achievements of the so-called knowledge economy is the mass production of ignorance, stupidity, and hatefulness. The philosopher Jürgen Habermas argued at length that language as a medium of mutual understanding is not just an impotent component of the life world, but is constructive of it. And he goes on to say he analyzed the capitalist economy, media, and techno-science, the, quote, colonization of the life world. Since the 1970s, a number of theorists, notably Henri Lefebvre, how do you pronounce this French guy's name, L-E-F-E-B-V-R-E, have shown how capital transforms social environments into abstract space. So it gets into showing how the capitalism and the commodified consciousness, and as that's 24/7 capitalism with the internet, how that is creating this what he calls a tabula rasa. It's kind of like this blank slate of abstractism and placelessness. Abstract space depends intrinsically on territorial resources, in particular fossil fuels. So here's the gist of so many things, how this the wonders of the internet and technology, the flip side is the terrestrial resources. And here's another thing that stood out to me about how I've for years called them the supremacist control freaks, but here he talks about how uncertainties and irregularities are to be wiped out under this imperial control. And he mentions this as going back to Roman expansion. The vast woodlands confounded observers who sought visual certainties and regularities for the mapping and domestication of conquered lands. So there's this psychology that goes back to this sort of, you have to map it, you have to chart it, it has to be certain, you have to program it. It's all very mechanistic and rational and technocratic. And that is what creates the destruction of the habitats. Instead, the forest, with its vagaries of light, shadow, uncertain distances, and the impenetrable abundance of living matter, was an environment that would only be dominated by eliminating it. So that's what's being lost in this world, as more building and more data centers and chopping down trees to put up solar farms and stuff like that. It's like that's what he's saying is on the line, is these lands, we're giving up the uncertainties. That's just part of life, the uncertainties, the irregularities, the great mystery. Because the supremacist control freaks want to control freak it. And then he goes back to the ENIAC computer, completed in 1946. The chemical cartels began the industrialization of agriculture. That's when healing medicines like a dandelion, they brainwash people to think it's a weed. The ARPANET, A-R-P-A-N-E-T, was designed in the 1960s. So he gives a history. But here's a key thing. He says the uprooting and herding of populations all over the world onto the internet is a confirmation of Paul Virilio's insistence, which seemed hyperbolic in the 1980s, that what used to be civilians are now permanently targeted elements in a new logistics of war adapted to the speeds of data networks. This was part of Virilio's larger argument that the ever-expanding war-making machine cannot coexist with civil society, and that a foundation of the military's agenda is a societal non-development. So this gets into the breaking down of society and how social media is superficial and doesn't allow for more long-lasting, genuine social communal relationships. And I'll read the last page or so of this of chapter. The philosopher Simone Weil, writing in 1943, several months before her death, identified a spiritual crisis of uprootedness as one of the most injurious consequences of world war and the dominance of a money economy. Her account has nothing in common with reactionary appeals to land and soil. For her, to be uprooted was to be denied real, active, and natural participation in the life of a community. She emphasized that one can remain geographically stationary and yet become torn away from a shared connection to the past or mutually nurtured expectations for the future. Now, this is what's spoken of a lot in Native traditions, the connections with the past and the nurturing of the future. No matter one's environment, whether urban or rural, Weil elaborated on the necessity of having multiple roots in it, roots that engage one practically through work and morally through attentiveness to others. In our present moment, all the new forms of digital uprootedness support the illusion of autonomy, while any vague longings for enduring emotional connections are thwarted by the transience and homogeneity of online interaction. Inevitably, this reinforces our uncomprehending indifference to the unraveling of the life world around us. Our uncomprehending indifference to the unraveling of the life world around us. We become blind to the mounting uprootings of a different kind, merciless and terrifying, which are on course to shatter our techno-complacency. Famine, drought, and warfare continue to force millions from their homes and once functioning communities, leaving behind lands and whole regions that can no longer support life. By casting our lot in with the becoming digital of everything, we drift in the hallucination that it will somehow all persist. In spite of our hopes and intentions, we unthinkingly perpetuate the disaster of the global present and doom ourselves to inherit the terminal tabula rasa of scorched earth capitalism. That's the end of that chapter there. So again, part of my summary with all this is seeing that he's highlighting this two-tiered system, but not just in the human sense of, you know, people surviving and trying to live comfortably just to survive, and other people, you know, caught up in the internet, in the bubble of that digital techno world, but also the main being, which gets overlooked, is Mother Earth. And another phrase from Crary, I like, the techno complacency. So he gets into some of where this is coming from, and I was thinking about it today with the agriculture and the food, as he charts that began, I would say, in the 1950s, when the chemical companies started, you know, creating the chemicals for the lawns and such like, and the pesticides and herbicides. And today, if you can get the organic foods, that's cool. But, you know, how many people are just, I got my good food, now I can go home and be healthier. But how many of us are not looking at the bigger picture, that too is a two-tiered system of those who can't afford it or access it? And then also, the same thing. Why are all so many foods being sprayed with all that crap that is not just affecting the food, but affects the habitat and the bees? And, it, you know, it's all interconnected. So instead of just, oh, I'm so relieved there's a non-GMO label, how do we, as a peoples of this earth, how do we begin to turn the tide that we even have to say, I'm so relieved there's a non-GMO organic food? So those are some of the big conundrum questions that arise. And, you know, while I do point out, because I always like to see some positives in whatever the BS, for the most part, it holds true. There's occasionally that's just flat out nonsense, but I appreciate Crary is making such a strong point, because it is really making me see the whole system from that perspective and in another light, and having me kind of reevaluate my own experiences and my own personal life and the way I use the technology and my understanding of the younger generations that are growing up with the technology. And I think that's the potential that he's pointing to, that without these reference points to outside of the internet bubble, what kind of people are people being trained to be? And are we? This is a sense of losing one's humanity is on the line. And I've heard others talk about that in various ways. So Crary really gets also to show it's not just going at the technology or the internet per se. He's showing how it's intertwined with the mining and the resources and the global wars, and how that is one of the gists, he says, is that the whole system, this whole system, domination system, is set up to preserve and protect that ongoing flow of capitalism and the resources that supply it, And you know, whether it's bees or human beings or whatever is in the way, that system of domination does not care. It is programmed for hundreds, if not thousands of years, to destroy so as to give these transient and sometimes useful, but in a sense transient indulgences at the expense of the bigger picture, which is, you know, interrelating face to face, caring for the land and the water and the air, and on and on. So thanks for listening, and be well, and happy holidays to you in whatever way you celebrate, or with the seasonal shiftings. Take care and enjoy.